Hi everyone, I'm Abby Berger. Welcome to Let's Rethink This. I'm so excited for you all to be joining me today, but before we get started, please make sure you're rate, reviewing, and subscribing to the podcast so that I can continue to improve the content you hear each week and so you never miss a new episode. I first wanted to start off by sharing what exactly you can expect to hear each week when you tune in. This podcast is about bringing you real conversations about mental health and mental illness. For almost 4 years now, I've been working in the mental health space at Independence Center, a nonprofit focused on supporting adults with severe and persistent mental illness. The focus of my role during that time has been on raising funds to support our programming and creating content to share with the community about why the work is so important. I have learned during my time at Independence Center that the best way to share the importance of mental health work is by letting people living with a mental illness share their own stories with struggles and success and explain how it impacts different facets of their lives, including education, employment, housing, relationships, and so much more. This podcast gives a platform to the often unheard stories of those dealing with a mental illness. It will also bring you stories of those advocating for better mental health services in our communities. It will be a mix of solo episodes and candid conversations. Today, I'd like to introduce Brittany Adams. Brittany is a program participant, or what we refer to as a member, at Independence Center. She also sits on the Independence Center Board of Directors. As a mental health provider in our community, we believe in giving voice and true power to the people that we serve. The members that sit on the board can bring a lived perspective to strategic initiatives and planning. By giving our members a seat at the table and a voice in all board matters, our organization creates a paradigm shift in the way mental health services are delivered, and we are more closely aligned with the needs of the population that we serve. Brittany also works as a peer specialist. A peer specialist is someone with lived experience of mental illness or of substance use disorder that works with others who are learning to manage their mental illness or addiction. I asked Brittany to first share her story with you and then join me in a conversation. So here's Brittany.
My name is Brittany Adams. Picture this. A six-year-old little girl getting molested and sodomized on her sixth birthday by her cousin. Imagine this going on every day until she was 12 years old. Now picture this little girl as a 15-year-old teenager being raped at gunpoint by her best friend. Imagine her realizing she was pregnant with her rapist baby. Now picture this teenager injecting herself with 200 units of insulin and taking over 500 pills because she gave up on life. Picture this teenager pronounced dead at 7:47 p.m. on November 6, 1995. Imagine her in a coma on life support for 3 weeks. I am that teenager. I started hearing voices at the age of 10. My parents would find me holding entire conversations with myself, but they thought I had an overactive imagination as I was an only child. I felt rejected by my parents. Often they would push me away when I wanted a hug or a kiss. My cousin used to tell me that what he was doing to me daily was his way of showing me that he loved me. Psychologically, I was under his spell. I began to look forward to him molesting me. I didn't know that it was wrong. When I started my menstrual cycle and he suddenly stopped molesting me, I felt rejected again. The voices began to grow in their intensity and negativity. My parents thought that if we moved away, that my acting out would stop. At the age of 14, we moved to Las Vegas, Nevada. I started school and quickly found friends. I became increasingly close to two of my male friends. Little did I know that one of those so-called friends would end up raping me at gunpoint in my own home. 2 months later, I found out I was pregnant by my rapist. Mentally, my mind and my world was in a whirlwind that just would not seem to stop. All of this trauma resulted in a complete psychotic break. I tried to commit suicide because I had given up all hope that my life was worth living. My mother told me that she heard the doctor call my time of death, but as he was exiting the room to deliver the bad news, I came back to life. Guess my spirit wasn't ready to die, but I ended up in a coma and I lost the baby. I was on life support because my left lung had collapsed and I couldn't breathe for myself. I was asked why I tried to kill myself, but I kept quiet about what happened to me. I said I could not remember. Over the next 5 years, I continued to be rebellious by acting out what my voices told me to do. I got pregnant and had a daughter at 21. After I had her, my panic attacks and voices got worse. I finally sought the help of a psychiatrist. I was originally diagnosed with paranoid schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, and an anxiety disorder. The medication was helping me not hear voices or be anxious, but I was sleeping my life away. So I began self-medicating with the street drug methamphetamine. Meth took away my voices, my anxiety, my pain, both physical and mental. It helped me lose weight and stay alert. My use of meth led me to doing criminal things just to get high so I wouldn't have to feel the pain of my life. The criminal acts caught up with me, and I ultimately ended up incarcerated. I received a limited amount of psychiatric help while I was in jail, but the day that I was released, I went out and got high. I was still self-medicating and miserable. I stayed high every day for a year, when finally my other criminal acts caught up with me once again. This time I was incarcerated for 17 months. I was 27 years old. It was during this incarceration that I had the epiphany that meth was no good for me. I also realized that I needed professional help to better handle my illnesses and not self-medicate with meth. When I was released, I moved to St. Louis. I finally got approved for SSI, and I ended up moving into a boarding home with 10 other people. It was at this time that I received a letter and brochure. It was the Independent Center reaching out to me. I wasn't doing anything besides sleeping and eating on a daily basis, so I figured that I didn't have anything to lose. I immediately fell in love with the clubhouse. I was so eager to become a member. During enrollment, I had to establish some goals, and I actually thought about my future instead of my past. I started volunteering to do different jobs around the clubhouse. The more engaged I became, the better I started feeling about myself. However, I still had a lot of traumatic life events that I needed help to deal with. The Independent Center got me connected with a good psychiatrist and therapist at Midwest Psychiatry. And I actually found the motivation to go back to school. I have since graduated from Southern New Hampshire University with a bachelor's in psychology. The clubhouse has been a lifesaver for me. Since becoming a member at the Independent Center, I have quit smoking, graduated college, started working as a peer specialist at BJC Behavioral Health, and I have purchased my first home with the love of my life, who was also a member of the clubhouse. I have accomplished most of my goals that I established so long ago. I am still in therapy as there are many hurdles for me to overcome. The clubhouse is helping me to manage the new diabetes diagnosis, yet another obstacle. I am confident that I can deal with this hurdle as long as I have the Independent Center. They are my lifeline. My life has been hard and traumatic. I have been through horrific things, but yet here I am. I am no longer a victim. I am not defined by my past. I am not my illness. So let me tell you who I am. I am confident. I am strong. I am a colleague. I am a member of an elite community. I am a college graduate. I am a best friend. I am someone's girlfriend. I am a woman who has conquered the worst of things that life has thrown at me. But I feel like my life has just begun. I thank God every day for sending me to the clubhouse, for they have truly saved my life.
Brittany, first, thank you so much for sharing your story with us. Your resilience in the face of adversity shines through in it and touches on so many different topics like trauma, abuse, stigma, the need for supportive communities, housing, healthcare, education, employment, and so much more. I'm so honored to have you as the first guest of Let's Rethink This.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm glad to be here.
To start off, I want to dig into a couple of the things that you mentioned in your story. So what was the moment like when you realized you needed help for your substance use and mental health issues? Was there a moment that you can pinpoint, or was it a culmination of moments?
I would have to say it was a culmination of moments, especially after I had my oldest daughter. That's when I had the most clarity, like the clearest mind I had in a while, because when I was pregnant, I didn't use. That was like the one time that I was able to stop using was when I was pregnant. But when I had her, I came to the realization that what you've been doing thus far hasn't worked for you. So you need to do something different. You need help. So that's when I sought help.
So what was your family's reaction during this time? Like, were they supportive? Were they understanding? Did they know what mental illness was? And how did they help you through this if they were able to?
That's the one thing about my family. My family is not very understanding of mental illness. They think that I'm faking. They think that it doesn't happen with Black people. It's a big stigmatization, especially in the African-American community, where a lot of African-Americans think that mental illness only affects white people. It's a white person's disease. And I'm here to debunk that myth. Like, no, I am far from being white and I have mental illness. You know, my family didn't understand my behavior. They thought I was just acting out. They thought that it was a phase that I'd grow out of it. Like, they had so many thoughts except the right one.
Yeah, just not looking at it as a disease or, right, you know, a diagnosis that it can be managed and you can find the support that you need. So tell us a little bit about moving from Vegas to St. Louis. Did you know people in St. Louis that you were planning to move in with, or was it just kind of a fresh start? What was it like?
It was a little bit of a fresh start, but it was also at the same time knowing people here. I have family here. I grew up in Belleville, but I was always over here in St. Louis at a family member's house. So I was familiar with it, and I had been wanting to move back home, but I had to stay with my mother. My mother was sick. And after my mother passed away, I had nothing tying me to Vegas. And I'm just like, I need to leave Vegas. Mm-hmm. Vegas is just full of a lot of bad memories, you know. And the only thing good that I feel came out of Vegas was my children. Other than that, Vegas was horrible.
I don't know much about Vegas. I've never been, but but it sounds like St. Louis was, you know, a better spot for you. So the family that you did have in St. Louis, did they know the extent of your mental illness?
No, they didn't know. And when I became symptomatic, my cousin put me out and she was like, you can't stay here. And nobody wanted to let me stay with them.
And that's when I ended up going to a battered woman's shelter. I stayed there for about 6 months and then I was homeless again. So then I moved in with my abuser's family, but I wasn't comfortable there, you know, and I ended up moving into what they call a rooming house with 10 other people. That's when Jocelyn and Andrea outreached me for the 3700 project. And that was a pivotal moment in my life.
Yeah, I definitely getting the support and learning about something new. And I do want to just pause here for our listeners to talk about the 3700 Project. If you're not familiar with what that is, it's a disease management project through the Missouri Department of Mental Health. It identifies Medicaid-eligible individuals with high medical costs who have a diagnosis of either a serious mental illness or substance use disorder and are not currently receiving Division of Behavioral Health Services. So once an individual is identified, they're placed on a DM cohort, which means that they're eligible for outreach from a contracted provider within the Division of Behavioral Health. The goal is to locate and enroll these individuals in behavioral health services to improve health outcomes and reduce related medical costs. So, Brittany, when you were outreached, you had been added to the list that Independent Center received identifying you as someone in need of services. Can you tell us about receiving that letter? How did you get it? When did you first meet Jocelyn and Andrea?
Okay. When I got the letter and brochure, I wasn't doing anything but eating and sleeping my life away. So I decided after looking through the brochure, I'm like, well, maybe I could call and see what it's about. I don't have anything to lose. So I called and Jocelyn and Andrea came out like the next day and they told me about the Independent Center. And I was just like, well, what do you got to lose? You know, so I'll never forget the date. I remember it like it was yesterday. April 28, 2012 was the day that I had my tour of the clubhouse, and I fell in love at first sight. I was like, yes, this is what I need. And I spoke with Sue. Sue's the one that enrolled me. And it was at that point in time, on that date, was the first time in years that I thought about my future instead of my past. That was the life-saving moment that I needed. You know, I didn't realize that I was becoming symptomatic until I start coming here. And I'm like, okay, well, I'm doing this. I'm doing this. I'm doing that. I'm doing that. Like, okay, you're getting sick. Your next step is going to be the hospital. And that's where I don't want to end up, you know? So I was like, I need help. And the Independent Center helped me. They got me connected with, at the time it was Dr. Bonecamp. He was my first psychiatrist at Midwest Psychiatry, which is now IC Health Group, which transitioned over to Dr. Conway when Dr. Bonecamp left. We finally, I'd say it took them about 2 years to finally come up with a combination of the right combination of medicines that worked best for me without the lethargic feeling or the zombie-like feeling that I had previously on medications, which was the whole reason why I started self-medicating with meth, was because I didn't like the way the medications made me feel, you know? So
when you came to Independent Center and you started seeing a psychiatrist here in St. Louis, what was the diagnosis process like? Did you have the same diagnosis as when you were first identified as someone with a mental illness, or had it changed over time because of some of the things that you had gone through and experienced?
It actually changed. Like my original diagnosis was paranoid schizophrenia, bipolar, and an anxiety disorder, generalized anxiety disorder. When I moved out here and started seeing Dr. Bonecamp, that diagnosis changed to schizoaffective disorder, PTSD, and generalized anxiety disorder. That's my current diagnosis today. And the medications, like I've been on so many different medications over the years, you know, and I can honestly say the medication I'm on now is the best medicine I've ever been on, you know, because I'm able to hold a job. I'm able to volunteer here at the clubhouse, you know, I'm able to function and have regular daily living activities that I wouldn't have had before, you know?
Yeah. And I think that's a pretty common experience. I mean, the National Institute of Mental Health reports that usually there's a delay for the onset of treatment or the onset of symptoms, I should say, to receiving adequate treatment. And the average for the United States is 11 years, which is outrageous. You know, you think about any type of medical diagnosis, and if you waited 11 years on average to receive treatment, it's just a really prolonged amount of time where a lot of other things can happen and start to compound on pre-existing conditions. So I want to talk a little bit about how you got enrolled and started participating. When you first came here to the Independence Center, did you or had you known anyone with a mental illness previously?
I mean, yes, I did, but I wasn't able to identify it as a mental illness, you know, because growing up as a child, almost in every African-American family, they've got, oh, that's just crazy Uncle Pete, or that's just crazy Sister Sue, you know, and that was mental illness manifesting. But we couldn't pinpoint and say that's mental illness. So I've had family members that suffer from mental illness. I'm able to see that now in hindsight. But back then, you know, I just, oh, that's just crazy Uncle Artley. You know, I wasn't able to say that's my uncle and he has mental illness.
Yeah.
You know, I can say that now, but back then I couldn't say it.
Yeah. So this really was like the first place that you had come and met people who had a diagnosis, were open about sharing their experience with having a mental illness. How did that make you feel? What was that like coming into this type of environment?
At first, it was a bit overwhelming, you know, because of the stigmatization and the preconceived notions that I had about mental illness before coming here. It's like in my mind's eye, I saw something totally different than what the reality of the situation was. So I was a bit intimidated, you know, and I was kind of shy. But the more I came and the more I got to meet and speak to other members, and it's like, wait a minute, there are people just like me, you know, like their diagnosis doesn't define who they are. They're not just a schizophrenic or they're not just bipolar. There are a man or a woman that has this diagnosis that's living their life, you know, and it was definitely an eye opener for me.
Yeah.
You know, it helped me to put a lot of things in perspective.
Right. I mean, even your own stigmatization of yourself, I think it definitely makes a difference to be in an environment where others are having shared experiences. So you mentioned being asked about your goals when you first started, and how that was a really pivotal moment for you because you hadn't thought in such a forward-thinking way in quite some time. So what thoughts were running through your head when somebody said, Brittany, what are the goals that you want to work on?
I had a million and one thoughts. My mind started racing. It was like, I can do this. I can do this. I can do this. It was just zipping all over the place. But Sue was able to kind of help me rein those thoughts in and hone in on certain thoughts. And I decided that I wanted to go back to school. because I had tried college on two different occasions and I dropped out both times, 2-3 weeks into the semester. It was like, it's too much, I can't do it. And I drop out, you know, but at the same time, I was taking multiple classes and it was too much, you know, so I dropped out. I said, I want to go back to school. I want to get my degree. I wanted to lose weight because eating and then laying down is a bad combination. And I got big. I mean, right now I'm 200 even. I got up to 260 pounds. I look like a damn beached whale. Yeah, I'm serious. And I was like, I got to do something about it. I got to put the sweets down. I got to put the junk down, you know? So I was able to lose 60 pounds, but it's like, hey, something's got to give. But I know that's a side effect of my medications, you know, because it makes me crave carbohydrates. And so I have to eat something sweet. So I still get that sweet tooth. Occasionally I'll indulge in like a Blizzard from Dairy Queen or ice cream shake. But for the most part, I eat whole wheat crackers with peanut butter and jelly on it. I get my sweets and it's not a whole lot of sugar in it.
Yeah.
You know? So it was just life changing, you know, to actually think that I had a future. You know, because for so long, I didn't think I had a future. I didn't see myself living past 21. And then to be 30, it's like, I didn't see myself living past 35. You know, then when I hit 35, I was like, you're doing it. You're actually doing it. You know, and it gave me a sense of pride. To look back to where I was and look to where I was at the moment and then to look beyond that. Like to be able to focus on each of those three things with clarity, with a clear mind, was something I hadn't had in years, you know? And I said it once and I'll say it again, the clubhouse literally saved my life.
So when you came to the clubhouse, what did you start off doing, you know, what type of work or things were you filling your day with?
Well, I started off with petty cash or doing bus passes, and some light data entry work, like entering in attendance. But I felt like I hadn't found my niche. I just felt like I was just aimlessly wandering around the clubhouse. Then I went to the front desk and learn how to sign people in and out. And at that time, we were using binders, paper. You know, we were signing people in by hand, you know, and there were two binders, A through M, N through Z. And one person would do A through M, one person would do N through Z. And they had papers pre-printed with the members' names. So it was like I got to learn members' names as I signed them in. And I took joy in bringing a smile to someone because it could completely change the whole trajectory of their day. You know, members have told me on numerous occasions, the fact that you remembered my name made me feel really good. You know, and just to be called by their name with no judgment, with no hostility, with no preconceived notions, but a genuine, hello, how are you doing today? Brittany, you know, or whatever name it is, just little things like that mean the world to our members.
Yeah. And our staff. I mean, I can say for myself, I love walking through the front door and having you greet me or having any other member greet me and know who I am and say hello and ask how I'm doing. It definitely brightens your day and also reminds you that you're part of a larger community and that people care about you and want to know how you're doing and what you're up to. So I think that feeling is not only applicable or for members, but also for staff or anybody entering the building. But I do want to ask, so you were working at the front desk and you had told Sue when you first started that you wanted to go back to school. So about how long did it take you to really get back into your education goals, and what types of supports did you have and to get you started?
Well, I made the goal on April 28, 2012. By June of 2012, I was in school.
Oh, wow. That's quick.
I started right away.
Okay.
And I started going to the University of Phoenix, their downtown campus. It was one night a week on Monday nights from 5 to 9. And it was one class at a time. That's what really attracted me to them, was the one course every 5 weeks. That was considered full-time at the University of Phoenix. So every 5 weeks, I cycled through a class every 5 weeks, you know. And I did that for 2 years. I got all my general requirements out of the way. And then I focused in on my major, which was psychology. And it transferred to online courses. University of Phoenix tuition just was sky high. Mm-hmm. So they told me I was going to have to come out of pocket about $15,000 to finish my degree. That was very disheartening. I felt discouraged. But when I brought it to, who was it? It wasn't, when I brought it to Melanie, who was my community support worker at the time, she was like, look for another school. She was like, there are countless other schools that are online and that are a lot cheaper. So I started doing some Google searching and I came across Southern New Hampshire University. I'd seen their ads on TV. And when I looked at their tuition, it was half of that of University of Phoenix. I hurried up and transferred. I had 84 credits at University of Phoenix, 81 of them transferred over.
That's awesome.
So essentially I only had to do one class over again, mm-hmm. you know. And I still stayed with the one class at a time. With SNHU, it was one class every 9 weeks. So it was only basically like 4 quarters in a year, mm-hmm. you know. And it took me a total of 6 years to get my bachelor's, but I'm okay with that. I don't care if it would have took me 8. You know, I was going at my pace, what I knew I could handle. You know, Melanie, Sue, Michael Johnson, Jocelyn, Andrea, and my better half Stanley, they all rallied around me and kind of kept me encouraged and kept me motivated to don't give up, to keep going, to put one foot in front of the other, to take one day at a time, you know. And when I did it, I had such a sense of accomplishment. I was like, oh my God, I really did it this time. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, you didn't give up. You actually stayed with it. And I was like, my mom would be proud. You know, to look down on me now and to see where I am now, and even to see me almost 13 years ago when I was in active addiction. Like when my mother passed away, I was still in active addiction. So that was her last view of me, was an active addict. Mm-hmm. And it broke my heart that I wasn't able to go to her deathbed to make my amends or to say goodbye to her. You know, I had to do that at the funeral. And I was a complete wreck. You know, I stayed high every day. I didn't want to feel the pain of losing my mom. I didn't want to feel the pain of the traumatic past that I had. Like, I didn't want to address any of that. You couldn't talk to me about it. I don't want to hear it. I don't want to talk about it. Mom's the word. Mm-hmm. You know, talk to the hand. Face not listening. You know. But it wasn't until I started going to Midwest Psychiatry and had gotten connected with a therapist there to help me face, address, and process the traumas of my life. You know, I'm still in therapy and I'll probably be in therapy the rest of my life, but I'm okay with that because it helps to have an objective person that's not part of your inner circle that can help you see things from outside of the box. You know, because inside the box, you're seeing things one way and there's a completely different way to look at things, you know, so it helps to have an objective person to help you with that.
Yeah.
So I'm okay with being in therapy for the rest of my life. I'm proud of it. It helped me. Like, if I hadn't have been in therapy, I'd probably be dead right now. I probably would have committed suicide. Seriously. If I didn't commit suicide, I would have been back using again.
Mm-hmm.
That's how critical and important of a role therapy and the right medications did for me.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a combination of a lot of things that help us get through anything that we're facing. You know, it can be mental illness, it can be a physical illness or just a traumatic life event. There's so many supports that need to be in place to pull people through it and help them. And I definitely am glad that you found the right supports and to get you to accomplish your goals, because it is challenging to go back to school and it is challenging to build a new life in a new community. It is challenging to face your traumas. You know, all of those things are challenges that you rose to and met and now are moving forward in your life. So now that you graduated college, you became a certified peer specialist, and that's a pretty cool thing. So do you want to share with the listeners what a peer specialist is?
The easiest way that I can describe it is it's like a counselor and a social worker mesh together, but they don't have the degree of either one of those. And they have personal experience with either mental health, substance use disorders, or both of those co-occurring disorders. And they help fellow people that are experiencing some of the same things they've experienced, kind of help them put things in perspective, help motivate them, help show them that there is a light at the end of the tunnel, you know, that if I can do it, anybody can do it. You just have to be willing to put the work in. You know, it took me a lot of work to get to where I am today. You know, because 9 years ago, I couldn't even begin to tell my story without uncontrollably sobbing, hyperventilating into a full-blown panic attack. You know, I was having night terrors, you know, flashing back to what happened to me as a child. And I was having accidents in the bed, you know. And 9 years of therapy has brought me to the point where I can share my story with confidence without reliving it all over again and being traumatized all over again, talking about it.
Right.
You know, I actually find it empowering to tell my story, because every time I tell my story, it takes another chip off my shoulder, you know, from where I had a chip for the people who did me wrong, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, it just takes that away. And it's like, I forgive people. You know, you can go through life holding grudges and holding animosity toward people, but the only thing's going to do is keep you sick.
Right.
Yeah. You know?
So when you were in school, did you know that you wanted to be a peer specialist, or was that something that came afterward?
That came afterward, because my original goal when I first started school was to become a therapist. But as I went through school and went through therapy myself, I learned about peer specialists, like what it is. And I said, hey, I could do that. You know, I'm like, I would basically be being a therapist just without the therapy degree, mm-hmm. you know, because I'm sharing my story. I'm helping them cope with what they're going through. I help them with healthy coping skills. And so I'm like, I can give that a shot. And I said, but I want to finish school first. you know, because I knew, I found out that the peer specialist training was a 5-day, all day training. And I'm like, I can't do that and go to school right now. I just can't do it. It'll be too overwhelming and I'll flunk at something. You know,
one step at a time, definitely.
Exactly.
So once you became a peer specialist, which congratulations, that's a big accomplishment in addition to finishing school and everything else that you've accomplished.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Did you go to work as a peer specialist right away, or how did you find a job as a peer specialist?
Well, no, I didn't go to work right away as a peer specialist. I didn't start work right away. Like, I started looking for work, you know, like I built a resume and used some of my skills that I learned here at the clubhouse and put it in my resume, because I hadn't worked a legit job since 2004, you know, and here it was 2018. It's like, where do I start?
Right.
What do I do?
It's kind of scary.
Yeah, it was, you know, but I was able to write a nice resume and I put it on Indeed.com. And I wasn't looking for peer specialist positions. I was looking for like customer service or data entry or receptionist, the type of work I was doing sitting at the front desk. And I went on an interview, and when it was at a doctor's office, and the doctor asked me, well, where do you see yourself in 5 years? And before I could even think about it, I said, I see myself working full time as a peer specialist.
Oh, God.
And I'm like, what in the hell did you just say, Brittany? Like, you just talked yourself out of a job. And he asked me, he said, well, why don't you do that now? And I looked at him. I said, you know, I don't know. And I'd say I went on a total of like 10 interviews. And I felt like the interviews all went great, but nobody called me back. If they would call me and say, well, we went with a different candidate. So, but I still remain optimistic. I just had an optimistic feeling. I'm like, I'm going to find the right job. The right job is still going to come along and it's going to be handmade for me. And Stanley was getting so frustrated. He's like, you're going on all these damn job interviews. You don't have a job yet. And I'm like, babe, calm down. The right job is going to come along. So I saw it advertised on an Indeed about a peer specialist, and it was part-time because I was terrified of losing my benefits, my SSI benefits. That's a whole nother topic. We're not going to go there.
Yeah.
But it was part-time. I'm like, I can do that. So I interviewed with BJC Behavioral Health on a Friday. It was the Friday before Memorial Day. That Monday, the weekend passed. That Monday was a holiday, Memorial Day. Tuesday morning at 9 o'clock that morning, I got the offer letter for BJC Behavioral Health.
Wow.
And the rest is history.
That's pretty exciting. And now you've been working there almost
2 years.
Yeah. Wow. Congratulations.
Thank you.
That's so cool. And such a good way for you to use your experience and your growth and your work that you've put in to deal with your own mental illness and own substance use disorder. And now you can give that gift to other people, which is pretty special. So that's really cool. I could interview you all day. You know, I have one last thought that I think is a misconception that people have a lot. And that is, now that you've accomplished so much and now that you have met your goals, that there's not much work for you to do. That managing a mental illness, you know, it's kind of like you hit a point and you're good. And I think that that's a misconception. And I'm curious to hear what your thoughts are on that.
Yes, I have reached, I've accomplished my goals that I have set those years ago, but my ultimate goal is to stay healthy, to stay clean, to stay forward thinking and to constantly reevaluate what my goals are, you know, and set new goals. Like every day has its own challenges, you know, and I face each day as if it were my last. And so I don't have any regrets, you know. I don't regret anything I've done, anything I've been through, anything I've seen. Because if I hadn't experienced all of that, I wouldn't be the woman I am right now.
Right.
You know, so I thank God for all my experiences, good, bad, ugly, indifferent. You know, it made me who I am today. And I, because I went through all of those things, I can help another person who's gone through some similar things, help them realize their own true potential, you know, and not feel restricted by their diagnosis or restricted by their substance use disorder, you know, to let them know that there is another way, you know, and we can do this one day at a time.
Yeah, definitely. It's always that one day at a time. So my very last question for you, and this is something you touched on a little bit earlier, but if you want to go in more detail, feel free. And it is that if you could debunk one myth about mental illness, what would it be? And you mentioned earlier the stigma of the Black community with mental illness. Do you want to say a little bit more about that?
Absolutely. You know, my lived experience being a Black woman is that mental illness was a white person's disease. That was ingrained in me as a child. So when I began to experience the hallucinations and the voices, I kept that to myself because of fear of the stigmatization, you know, and I'm living proof that mental illness knows no boundaries. It could care less what gender you are, what your sexual orientation is, what your ethnicity is. It breaks all barriers, you know, and it touches anybody, you know, regardless of what you identify with, you know. And for Black people, please educate yourself on what mental illness is. Please be able to recognize the signs and don't be afraid to get the help, you know, because that's another thing. They don't believe in going to, Black people don't go to therapy. This Black woman does. You know, I go to therapy. I'm proud about it. You know, so it's so much in the African-American community in the negative sense when it comes to mental illness, you know, and it's sad, you know, because there are some people who are steadfast in that, oh, it doesn't happen to Black people, you know, and then they have a situation, you know, someone in their family has mental illness, and then they're like, well, what do I do? Well, get them some help. Well, mm-hmm. Where do I go? Google it. You know, use right. Google for everything else. Google yeah. it. Yeah. You can Google behavioral health services. You know, don't hide them away because it's nothing to be ashamed of, you know. Yes, I have a mental illness. I have a substance use disorder. Okay. And that doesn't define who I am.
Right.
You know, I'm a recovering addict and I will be a recovering addict until the day I die. And I'm okay with that. You yeah. know, and I'm proud of that. You know, I've got almost 13 years clean.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And that's not easy to do.
It is not, no.
You know, and I'm grateful, but I take one day at a time. Like today, I'm staying in today. I can't worry about what happened yesterday because yesterday is gone. And I'm not going to focus on what's going to happen tomorrow because tomorrow's not promised to me. So I'm going to use all my energy and focus on the present and work on what I have control over. What I have no control over, I let it go. I give it to my higher power, say, God, you take it, and I leave it alone. What happens, happens, you yeah. know?
Yeah, I definitely think that's such a good last thought for this episode. And I'm so glad that you came on and were so forthcoming with your story. Over the course of this podcast, you will hear stories of people who face similar challenges as Brittany's. You'll hear about the communities and from the communities and families and friends who support them, and what the latest research is showing about managing a mental illness. Next week's podcast will be a conversation with founding director of Independent Center, Bob Harvey. We are planning to talk about the history of mental health care, the establishment of community-based behavioral health care, and he will share a couple of stories from his time as the founding director. We are also going to put some notes in our show notes section of the website. So if you want to learn more about 3700 Project or peer specialists, you can click the link in the show notes. If you yourself are struggling with a mental illness or a substance use disorder, please visit www.independentcenter.org to find a list of local and national resources. You are not alone, and I can't wait to talk with you all next week. Thanks for listening.